across the galaxy. This is where conspiracy on the wild side meets the perspective of a lifetime. This is the Free Zone with your host, Freeman.
Hello and welcome to the Free Zone. Well, as all of the protests, riots, and political intrigue go on, who's looking up? Who cares about space? How many of you are tracking the multitude of rockets that have been launched over during this entire lockdown? Had our first humans launched from Cape Canaveral in decades. Nobody seemed to notice. We have rocket launches going up on every country, all over the globe, launching satellites after satellites, just endless. I've covered these in my Twitter feed. If you want to keep up, at Freeman TV on Twitter, you will see every one of these. I try to tweet them all. There's so many rockets going up that I almost feel like you're going to get bored if I post them all. I mean, damn, SpaceX even tried to launch 3 rockets in one day. We have a multitude of satellites going up. Everybody's pushing towards Mars, and life in outer space is so much stranger. But that doesn't stop what's going on planet Earth. Planet Earth, if we start to really realize that all of the propaganda that we're witnessing, all of the menagerie of just high strangeness of protests and riots and all the craziness that's going on with lockdowns and face masks, and we stop thinking about all the other mysterious anomalies going on around us. And believe me, folks, I feel these have far more impact on what's going on planet Earth than the pandemic. Yes, the secret societies, the secret space programs, the secret military operations have been digging into strange magnetic anomalies on planet Earth. They've done everything they can to recreate these anomalies using particle colliders such as CERN or the Phoenix and STAR at Brookhaven National Laboratories, colliding gold particles that actually manipulate space-time. What gave them these ideas? Why do we have a CERN? Why is every country in the world trying to pay to be a part of this program? And how did it end up becoming so much of what we have in the world today? Remember, CERN created the World Wide Web. This wouldn't exist. The Free Zone wouldn't exist without CERN. But these stories don't start with the high science that we are looking at. They start with the ancient past, and they go deep into our ancient history. Magnetic anomalies, portals, strange apparitions, disappearing people, disappearing vehicles, disappearing military have all been a part of this story for millennia. So tonight we're going to talk with Chad Stumpke. He's author, researcher, and seeker. His investigations range from searching out the secrets of ancient civilizations and their hidden archaeology to probing the present for answers in regards to UFOs, stargates, symbolism, spirituality, and humanity's greater potentials, which is absolutely where this all leads. Intentions being that searching out these keys that have been hidden in the past, we may be able to unlock the gates and doors in our own higher potentials. This is the truth, folks. So let's get deep in with Chad Stumpke as we start to look at the strange Great Lakes Triangle and the mysterious disappearances of military people and unexplained phenomenon. Hey, Chad, welcome to the Free Zone.
Hey, Freeman. Thanks for having me back, man. I'm super excited to be here. Looks like we've got quite a bit to talk about today, huh?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. I mean, who could imagine that in 2020 you could start a conversation that had nothing to do with lockdowns and pandemics, riots and protests and political intrigue and still remain completely important in our current time? Because if all of this is one big show, If this is the major lockdown that we're witnessing, we have to realize that there was a greater reason, that there's an anomalies, these secrets that are actually behind the actions of the elite. And they began, I mean, the idea of magnetics and magic have gone hand in hand throughout time. And the connection between these with, let's say, the Philadelphia Freemasonic Lodge, Benjamin Franklin's Lodge, depicting magnetic anomalies in their art and architecture, which you can find all in my Flickr account if you want to look at the images of all of this. They depict the magnetic variations, weird correlations to architecture and how this works. And it is believed that this even was the impetus for Ed Lee Scalman to learn the technology to move the giant stones that formed Coral Castle. So secret societies, mysteries on planet Earth, UFOs, portals, disappearing people. These are the things that really play the role in where the world is heading. What would you say?
I would say absolutely. And I mean, like you said, right, the Freemasons, they were interested in it and, you know, secretively would put it in depictions. Goes back before that, though. You know, even the ancient mounds across North America were normally on magnetic anomalies or ley lines and, you know, stone circles many times. This has been a thing for, you know, thousands of years. Culture, societies, it may have went by different names in the past, but they have always known these magnetic anomalies, these X points, these mystery zones, had special, you know, special things could happen in these places, sometimes for the good, sometimes for the bad. And it's always been about harnessing these energies. And I think that's in part where we may be today, is there's people out there trying to harness these energies and use them as a catalyst for whatever, you know, whatever their purpose is. And they're everywhere. They've been studied. They've been documented. They've been mapped out. And I think they're starting to be used, and sometimes under the radar, so to speak.
Well, when we look at the area that Ghislaine Maxwell was found in and all the correlations to the portals and UFOs that were going on just in that little space that she was holed up in before they nabbed her, or however that situation fell together. I mean, that is just one weird coincidence that went along with all of this. The missing children, satanic ritual abuse, and this all tied up into portals that go into this Great Lakes Triangle.
Yeah, it all has to do with, not all, but I think a lot of it comes back to this magnetic energy and harnessing it. And like I said, you just mentioned the Great Lakes Triangle. This is a triangle that surrounds the Great Lakes that people, planes, ships have vanished or sometimes just malfunction instantaneously. And many times in these exact locations, not only are there magnetic anomalies, but there are sacred sites that ancient cultures had most likely marked these magnetic anomalies with. So, you know, I've studied the modern magnetic anomalies, which have had parks built on them, which to me is a way of probably harnessing this energy. I call them urban portals many times. But many places where, you know, parks ain't able to be built or they aren't able to be harnessed, let's say out in the middle of the Great Lakes, for instance, those anomalies are still there and haven't been harnessed. And it appears that when planes, people, ships, what have you, go through these anomalies, the energies can have all kinds of different effects, from just shutting down engines to mental and consciousness effects. But it makes sense why they would be trying to utilize these magnetic portals, so to speak, with children also. It's all about harnessing energy. Like I said, you can harness energy for great purposes, or you can harness energy for absolutely evil purposes. And I think this is almost in some way possibly a battle. We call it a battle of the magnetics, you know?
Yeah, that's what we were saying in your introduction, is this idea doesn't just lead to control for the occult elite. It it leads to liberation for mankind as we begin to understand our true potential.
That's exactly it, man. That's exactly it. And, you know, for years I've been focusing on the urban portals, I like to call them, Stargate Detroit, and 90% I've been focusing on the positive. But a lot of negative is emerging lately where, like, I, you know, if it's a battle, we got to bring more attention to these. So the positive symbolism, the positive attributes and harnessing positive energies can take place rather than these spots going under the radar and being able to be utilized for evil purposes or occult purposes without anybody being aware of it. So I think it's a big deal for all of us guys right now to, you know, make people aware of these urban portals and of these magnetic anomalies and these places that, you know, this is a new technology, this harnessing of this magnetic energy, at least new to most people. The governments have been studying it for years, but to a lot of people, it's new and it's possible as long as people start to become aware of it.
Right. I mean, imagine what it was like to be ancient man. Now, you are far more attuned to your natural environment, less and less distracted like we are in the 21st century. So it would seem that they would sense these things. And then this could account for how they ended up laying out markers. How far do these go back when they are starting to lay the stone circles and laying them upon ley lines and really starting to mark these out?
Well, here in Michigan, in the Great Lakes Triangle in particular, in the northern parts of Lake Michigan, there's an underwater stone circle. It's just out of Traverse City. It's in Grand Traverse Bay. I live about a half hour from it. And it's underwater. It's about 40 feet underwater. So once archaeologists discovered it, they figured out the time that, you know, that would have actually been dry land. And it had, the earliest it could have been built is 10,000 years ago. So that's the very earliest this stone circle in Michigan could have been built. And leading away from this stone circle, it's not just a stone circle, but there's a mile-long straight line of boulders leading away from it, which the archaeologists think that it may be a possible what they call a caribou drive lane, where what they're saying is a bunch of hunters would have hunkered down in this stone circle, and the caribou would have ran down this drive lane and, you know, they would have hunted them down. And that's very possible. There's another stone circle with a line in Lake Huron, and the archaeologists over there say the same thing. But I point out, you know, stone circles in Britain and around the world many times will have a stone circle and lines of stones leading away following ley lines. And, you know, to me, this is a very similar situation. And if you follow this mile-long line of stones leading away from this underwater stone circle, that points directly to another ancient stone circle about 30 miles away on Beaver Island. So, you know, could it have been a caribou drive lane? It's a possibility, but it's also a possibility this was an ancient stone circle marking magnetic anomalies with a mile-long line of boulders following a ley line pointing to another stone circle on Beaver Island. So that's kind of my point, or my point I like to point out with those stone circles, that they could be caribou drive lanes, but they could also be marking magnetic anomalies.
And why on earth was there a mastodon drawn on that thing?
Well, that's just it. One of these, glad you brought that up, Freeman. One of these boulders underwater has a incredible and very accurate carving of a mastodon on it. And that's another reason the archaeologists say this has to be at least 10,000 years old. But and one thing I want to clear the air with the underwater Stonehenge, as they call this, because if you go online and you type in underwater Stonehenge, because that's what they call the stone circle, you're going to get a bunch of fake images. You're going to see a scuba diver down there with a bunch of great big standing stones that look like Stonehenge. And those aren't the real images. They are what they are large, large boulders in a circle. But 9 times out of 10, if you try to look into this, you're going to get these fake images that a bunch of media sources put out. So I'd like to clear that up. It's just a giant ring of boulders, but super important. It's the only stone circle I've ever seen anywhere in the world with an incredible mastodon carving on it.
All right. Your audio is getting a little better right now. I don't know if you need to get closer to the mic. it's kind of, you're a little low.
Okay, gotcha.
So the Great Lakes Triangle, like the Bermuda Triangle, has these mysterious events occurring, and governments are very interested. Can you tell us some of these stories that you've uncovered?
Oh, I'd love to. Okay. Well, like I said, there's stories of people disappearing, vanishing, and sometimes reappearing. There's stories of ships sometimes sinking, never to be found. Sometimes they'll find the ship, but never find the people. Sometimes they'll find the people, but never find the ship. And when that occurs, the people never have any memory of what took place. And same with airplanes. Sometimes airplanes disappear off radar, never to be seen again. Other times, little remnants, you know, cushion bags and life vests will be found, but the plane will never be found again. So real unusual circumstances usually surround a lot of these stories. So I'll start off with a missing person story, I guess, one that's super interesting. And I call this the disappearance and the reappearance of Stephen Kubacki. And this was back in 1978. And this was in what they call the Lake Michigan Triangle. And within the Great Lakes Triangle, in the lower part of Lake Michigan, there's another triangle they call the Lake Michigan Triangle, where the strange occurrences are even more focused and more intense than the Great Lakes Triangle in general. So, I mean, just hundreds and hundreds of ships and planes have disappeared and went down in this area. So Stephen Kubacki, in 1978, he was a college student. He was about a week away from graduating, and he was going to go out on a cross-country ski venture out on Lake Michigan. And he'd done this many times before. So he told his parents, and he got his gear together and went out cross-country skiing. Well, Stephen never returned home that evening. So right away, his parents knew where he should have been. They started a search. They had the Coast Guard, the police, you know, everybody searching for him right away. And some snowmobilers found his skis about 200-300 yards out onto Lake Michigan, just sitting there. There was trails behind the skis leading up to him. And next to his skis were his ski poles, his backpack. And you can see where he stepped out of his skis and took several steps out towards the lake. And his footprints just abruptly end. So, you know, as strange as it sounds, you know, everybody kept looking for him. And a day or two went by and they just couldn't find him. So the state police told his parents, you know, the only possibility, you know, he had to have fallen through the ice. He must have fallen through and must have frozen back over real quick. And, you know, something weird happened where we couldn't tell, but he had to have fallen through the ice. So long story short is, you know, parents assume he's gone. And his Hope College, they actually grant him a diploma. He was only a week away from graduating. So that's kind of where the story ends. Until 11 months later, and hundreds of miles away, Stephen wakes up in a field in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. He wakes up and supposedly he's got a backpack sitting next to him, brand new sneakers on, a new t-shirt. He says his backpack was filled with maps, and he has a t-shirt, Wisconsin Marathon. And he hikes down into town, and I guess he says he didn't realize, you know, he'd been gone that long until he picked up a newspaper and realized it was over a year later. So he gave his sister a call, and his sister told him, you know, Dad moved out that way over the years. You're only like 50 miles away from Dad's house. So he got to his hitchhike to his dad's house, and imagine the amazement when his dad opened the door, and there was Stephen standing there. And, you know, his big media frenzy, of course, Stephen's back, and he really wouldn't talk about it. You know, after that, he said he wouldn't see a psychiatrist. He didn't know what happened. You know, he said his best guess was, you know, something like how hikers get cold and lose their memory. And, you know, that was it. Stephen reappeared a year later, 700 miles away in Massachusetts. And he wouldn't see a psychiatrist, but when he became older, he actually became a psychiatrist. You know, makes you wonder if he was really trying to figure out what happened. And he also became an author and wrote a couple books. I think the last book he wrote was called Rethinking God and Existence, if I'm not mistaken.
I bet that's intriguing.
I tell you what, Freeman, I tried to read it, and it's so far over my head. I mean, I don't say that about too many books. I couldn't even comprehend it. The stuff this guy was talking about, it was over my head, man. But so, and he's still around. He's living in Seattle, Washington, I believe. I tried to Facebook friend him. He wants nothing to do with anybody and does not want to talk about the story whatsoever.
Right.
So I mean, and if that truly happened, I guess that would. I mean, that's understandable. You know, I guess that'd be understandable. But,
yeah, and you really don't know. I mean, you know, when you've lost all that time, and he thought he had been on a marathon, like
he had new running shoes, a marathon shirt. He said, "The best I can, you know, guess, and maybe I ran a marathon in Wisconsin." And, you know, one story like this, I mean, you could chalk it up to that's nuts, and you know, the guy's crazy. But there's other stories like this. It ain't the only one. Off the top of my head. There's another one. His name was David Philippids, and he was the chief firefighter in Toronto. And him and his buddies went skiing. Once again, skiing. I don't know if that has any correlation, but he went skiing in Lake Placid with all his firemen buddies, and it was the last run of the day. And they skied down to the car, I guess, and he decided he didn't take enough pictures. So he was going to take one last run so he could take some pictures to take home to his wife. So the buddies are waiting down at the car for him to come down, and he never returns. So they get the ski patrol after a couple hours, and, you know, they're combing the hills. And after a couple days, they got all his firemen buddies from Toronto fly in, and everybody's searching the mountain. His wife's there, everybody's searching, and his wife gets a call, and it's David. He's freaked out. He says, "I don't know what happened. I'm in an airport." So she's like, "Well, go read a sign." So he goes and reads a sign. He's standing in Sacramento Airport in California. So she's like, "Well, call the police. Get the police there." He calls the police, and the police and airport security come, and Dave is standing there. He's still got his entire ski outfit on, his ski helmet, his ski goggles. He's wearing his entire outfit, you know. And has absolutely no clue how he got from his last trip going down that hill to Sacramento Airport in his ski outfit. And he didn't fly in. You know, they checked the flights. He didn't come in on a plane. So, you know, there are stories like that where these people just vanish and reappeared.
Well, there's so much more to this, too, if we take into account that the propaganda machine is bringing back to life the tic-tac UFO and UAPs, and that we are starting to get back into the UFO story. This also plays a large role in this Greater Lakes Triangle, right?
Oh, absolutely. Say the UFOs around the Great Lakes, you know, they go back in history. The first huge flap that most people are aware of is in the 60s in Ann Arbor, Michigan. They had a week-long flap where policemen, day after day, were literally chasing these lights around town. And Project Blue Book finally came in and brought J. Allen Hynek in. And this is the case that's famous for, he said, you know, all these lights, these police are chasing down the highways. This must be swamp gas. So that swamp gas, you know, you can imagine the uproar that caused. They pretty much chased Project Blue Book out of town. But, you know, then in the 90s, we had another giant flap right along the Lake Michigan Triangle in southwest Michigan. Same thing for like 3 or 4 days, policemen were chasing these lights around. And they were calling it into weather radar. They have, you know, all the tracks on the weather radar, and you know, nobody could figure out what these orange lights making all these maneuvers over the lake were. And it goes on and on. Now, if we go back in time, though, one thing I always point out about a lot of these disappearances with the Great Lakes Triangle, and a lot in general, a lot of times, is many times, for whatever reason, they have to do with the military. And I don't know exactly what, you know, what to put to that, but many of them have to do with the military. In one super incredible case, in 1953 over Lake Superior, they call this the Kinross case. And over the Sioux Locks, the Air Force got some readings that there was an unidentified flying object, and they launched a Scorpion fighter jet with pilot Lieutenant Monclov. And they sent him to chase down this unidentified object. So he was closing in on this object over Lake Superior, and the radar operators were watching him on the radars as he closed in, and his blip on the radar was getting close to the blip of the unidentified object and closing in, until both blips merged, which obviously means they got to be in the same airspace. Well, instantaneously after that, both blips vanished. There was no distress call from Moncloth, nothing. A few minutes later, one blip reemerged and continued north for a few minutes before it vanished off radar. That wasn't Moncloth's blip, I'm sorry. The Scorpion was never to be heard from again. Once it merged with the unidentified flying object, there was no distress call, and the plane vanished. So they instantaneously, this is the military, they instantaneously sent out other fighter jets after it to see what, you know. So now they're zipping down, looking for Lieutenant Moncloth and his Scorpion, and there's just nothing. There's no oil slicks. There's nothing. They got ships out there searching the waters, and they searched for days. And one of the fighter jets, though, is kind of unusual. This is about 45 minutes after the last transmission, after the blips vanished off radar. One of the fighter pilots said he thought he had got a garbled message, as he called it, from Lieutenant Moncloth. He couldn't make it out, and it was never confirmed, but he reported he thought he heard a garbled message from Lieutenant Moncloth, which makes absolutely no sense if his plane was to vanish off radar 45 minutes earlier. So that's pretty unusual. So over the years, you know, even his wife thought he was chasing a UFO on his tombstone plot. It even reads, he was chasing a UFO over a Canadian border when he lost his life. So his family, everybody believes this incident. Now, this what a disaster that is. But the same day, just a few hours earlier, and many people have heard of the Kinross case before, but most people have never heard of this case, which took place literally 6 hours earlier. On the opposite side of Lake Michigan, there's another Air Force base, Truex, in Wisconsin. And 6 hours earlier, they launched a Scorpion jet out on a test run, and it was flying around and instantaneously lost engine power and crashed into a lake in Wisconsin. And many times, for whatever reason, when these planes are in the vicinities of these unidentified objects or UAPs, for whatever reason, they straight up malfunction. So there's no, in this report, there's nothing talking about a UFO, but it's very coincidental that it went down, lost power, and then 6 hours later, this other Air Force plane was chasing down a UFO in the same vicinity. So what a bad day for the Air Force. Now, a lot of times, these cases, and I don't know how this happens, but they have synchronicities. Synchronicities pile up. So Lieutenant Moncloth, he was the pilot who was flying the Scorpion chasing the UFO, who disappeared. On the other side of the lake, the pilot who crashed just happened to be Lieutenant Moncloth's best friend. They used to be neighbors, and their wives are best friends. They literally lived 100 yards away from each other. So imagine these two wives living 100 yards away from each other, had their husbands stationed on opposite sides of the lake, and both of them were lost in the same day, possibly having something to do with the UFO. I mean, it's a pretty out there story, and it's somewhat become lost to history, so that's why I really like to bring it back.
Yeah, that's what's so good about keeping these together and the work that you do and keeping the research going. Because as you were saying, no oil slicks, no signs of debris, and it seems that these electronics just shut down and the planes fall out of the sky, or, you know, if they did fall out of the sky, you would find something. But then, you know, the ships too, found on the bottom without any wreckage, with no way to discern what possibly took this down. I know there's some more ship stories that go along with this as they traverse this Great Lakes Triangle.
Yeah, there are tons of ships, Freeman. In the Great Lakes, there's estimated to be over 8,000 to 10,000 shipwrecks. And they've only discovered upwards of 500-600 of them, I believe. So, I mean, wow. These were the highways back in the day. There are tons of shipwrecks. And like you said, many times, though, you know, it's a ship. And back in the day, especially wooden ships, usually you should be able to somehow figure, especially experts, figure out what happened to the ship. You know, is there a hole in the side or, you know. But in a lot of cases, what they're finding in the Great Lakes is they will find these ships at the bottom sitting there in absolute pristine condition where they don't owe, I mean, they'll come up with an explanation, but you know, like I said, these ships are sitting on the bottom in pristine condition. And say, so I got one good example of that is on Lake Erie. And on Lake Erie, there's a case back in 1942. It's an older case, which I love some of the older cases. And there was two ships together, the Admiral and the Cleveco. Now, the Admiral was a tugboat, and the Cleveco was a barge. And the Admiral was towing the Cleveco along the southern shores of Lake Ontario, and it came into a little bit of a snow squall. But the Cleveco didn't worry too much. You know, they could still, everything seemed normal. The tow line was still tight, so they were still being towed by the Cleveco. And all of a sudden, they realized the tow line is now going straight to the bottom. There was no distress call. You know, these ships were together. Usually you have communication going back and forth in some aspect. There was no distress call. Within an instant,
they couldn't see the tugboat.
They couldn't see the tugboat. The tugboat had pulled into a snow squall. Some of these snow squalls here on the lakes, I mean, it's like pulling into a wall. It'll be a literal straight line sometimes where you could be 200 yards apart and not be able to see what's in front of you. So I assume it's kind of a similar situation where the Admiral, you know, was in the squall. The Cleveco couldn't see it. And without warning or without a message, all of a sudden, Cleveco realized this tow line is now going straight to the bottom of the lake. So they obviously, they thought, you know, boat must have sank. So they called for help and they said, you know, we're basically anchored here by the other boat. Shouldn't be that hard to find us. They gave them directions and instantaneously they sent out the choppers. They sent out the Coast Guard boats, two of them. And the first person to get close to them was the chopper. And for whatever reason, though, they don't know how this happened, but they don't know if they cut the line and cut loose on purpose or they just broke free somehow, but they had broke free from the Admiral. So now they were drifting. And the chopper got sight of him, and as he got close, a snow squall descended upon him. He lost all visibility, and he lost his compass, and he lost his communication. So he made a decision to go back. So he went back. A little bit later, now that the Cleveco's, you know, calling the boats and the boats are getting close, the Coast Guard Ossipee got close enough at one point, they said it got within 150 yards of the boat. So, you know, I'm sure the Cleveco's getting excited or about to be rescued when once again, a snow squall descended upon the Cleveco and the Ossipee lost all sight of it. Now, at the same time the Ossipee lost all sight of the Cleveco, it also lost its communications, and it caught on fire. So it had to return. Another boat tried to find it, and they were unsuccessful. Long story short, chopper tried to find it, two boats. Nobody ever found it till about 50 years later. 50 years later, they found both boats separated by, you know, I think it was 10 or 20 miles, both of them in pristine condition, sitting on the bottom of the lake. And what they say must have happened is that basically in an instant, these boats must have, when these snow squalls descended upon the boats, it must have coated the boats of ice with ice, causing them to lose buoyancy and sinking in an instant. And it must have happened to both of these boats separately, which is, you know, it's possible. But, you know, you see these scenarios over and over again. Did ice take them down? Maybe. But what about the gyroscopes? What about the fires bursting out? What about the loss of communications on every one of the vessels? It's like, to me, there's something more going on here than just a freak weather storm.
No doubt. And really, we can track back the military, the government, the elites, the owners of this planet's obsession with magnetics, going all the way back to the Ark of the Covenant, if you will, creating an electromagnetic conductor out of acacia wood and gold and using it to destroy buildings and take down armies. You know, these are the stories of the Ark of the Covenant. And you will find the Ark of the Covenant stored in almost every Grand Lodge around the globe of Freemasonry. I've definitely taken pictures of a number of them when they lose control of us and we're running around their Mason temple like crazy wild people, finding everything we can. Yes. I remember that moment when first time we discovered the Ark of the Covenant there. We had this idea that there was a cardinal in Ethiopia who announced that he was the true keeper of the Ark of the Covenant, because in Ethiopia they have the Falashas, the Black Jews of Ethiopia, that have all of these replicas of the Ark of the Covenant, and supposedly one of them is real. And so he was supposed to show this to the world, or at least he announced that he would. And at the same time, the a magnetic anomaly occurred in the Gulf of Aden. And this is where, just off the coast of Yemen, this is where every nation came just into that little Gulf of Aden at that time for, you know, unknown reasons. They had said that there was the piracy of the Sirius Star that had brought, you know, Japan, China, America, everybody to this little Gulf in the Middle East. And of course, there was this really bizarre magnetic anomaly coupled with just the timing of this cardinal priest saying that he was going to reveal the Ark of the Covenant to the world. So we know, and then the Sirius Star, it was a code to Freemasonry to say, hey, pay attention to this, because that is their main sign and symbol, the Sirius Star. This all ties in to coming into the future with CERN and with the Brookhaven National Laboratories. Most people don't know there's, you know, major colliders in New York City that collide gold particles, and they're called Phoenix and Star, those two colliders, whereas it's Alice and Atlas over at CERN. And when they collided gold at the Brookhaven National Laboratories, they said, we manipulated space-time. We don't know exactly what we did or what really the hell happened, but we know that we messed with time. And so we have this science that, I mean, when I saw every nation trying to find their way to CERN, you know, begging them to take their money, it really got bizarre to understand, you know. Then of course we saw all these weird rituals and things that they were performing at these centers, you know, the CERN rituals and such. Because this always has tied together: magnetics, magic, the occult. That's where the word magus, magnus, you know, mage, everything that does with magic is magnetic, right? And so it's busting into this other dimension, and it's these anomalies and studies of these that have led them to even chase this demon, if we will. So the government came up, a couple of governments came up with programs to study this, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, talking about CERN, say CERN is kind of the final play. That's where we're at right now. But they started these studies a long time ago. Say, in Canada, they started these studies in the early 50s. 1953, they had a study, and it was literally called Project Magnet. And what they borrowed different facilities from Canada's Department of Transport around the country. And they would set up basically stations testing for magnetic anomalies. Now, Canada's Project Magnet, they openly told you they were searching basically for UFOs. At this point in 1953, there were UFO sightings all over Canada and Ontario and the Great Lakes Triangle I'm talking about, to the point where they actually set up this Project Magnet. And it only took a year or so till they got a bunch of supposedly incredible readings, and they reclassified everything and supposedly stopped the project. Now, at the same time, Canada's Project Magnet was studying magnetism, magnetic anomalies, and its correlation to unidentified objects. America was starting their own project studying magnetism. Coincidentally or not, they too called their project Project Magnet. And unlike Canada's Project Magnet that only lasted a couple years, America's lasted from 1951 to 1994. For 40 years, they flew planes around the Earth, America the most, but the last several decades, they flew around the entire globe tracking magnetic anomalies for 40 years. And that, I've tried to find, you know, these maps from this Project Magnet from the Navy, and I can't find any. I can't find their final, you know, their final maps where these anomalies were. They say that they use them for the Space Force, they use them for NASA and for the Navy for ship navigation, but for whatever reason, the public isn't, you know, privy to these magnetic anomalies.
Well, something is shifting, and this could even explain the loss of bees in the system. You know, as things are shifting, we're watching as this correlates with the strange actions of the sun, whereas we just went through the most extreme solar minimum ever, which is causing crop loss all across the globe. And this is going to really affect us here in the very near future. So please store your food, guys. Seriously, this solar minimum has had a major impact. And what we're realizing, and if we start to accept the electric universe theory, the connection between the sun, the magnetics, and Earth are very viable there. You know, it's, there's not much question left that they are completely in linked together with the sun. I mean, you know, beyond the obvious of how we've always thought of the sun just warming the planet to allow life to grow, there seem to be actual connections, portals going straight from Earth to the sun.
Yeah, and that almost sounds like science fiction, Freeman, but
it does, definitely.
That's what NASA says. Like, NASA literally came out in 2008 and said that our sun creates a magnetic portal that connects to our Earth. Every time the magnetic field from the sun collides with the magnetic field from the Earth, it creates an uninterrupted path, a magnetic portal, as they call it, to our Earth. So, you know, that makes me think. We're talking about these magnetic portals sometimes being marked by, let's say, stone circles or magnetic anomalies. Is this connected somehow to these magnetic portals that are coming from our sun to the Earth?
Shall we say stargates?
You read my mind, Freeman. Is our sun a stargate with a magnetic portal connected to our Earth? And if so, you know, I'm not necessarily saying that this is something where we could physically travel through this magnetic portal, although maybe, but what I am saying is, can information, can consciousness, can quantum physics, can all this stuff travel through these magnetic portals through time and space? Can information from out in space, from other realms, be filtering down into mystery zones, special spots on Earth, who ancients would go there and they would pick up on this information and they would mark it with a stone circle. They would mark it with a pyramid, what have you. You know, is this a scientific proof we've kind of been looking for? I mean, like I said, sounds like science fiction, but we got magnetic portals going from our sun to the earth and possibly down to sacred landscapes where people are picking up otherworldly information.
There are depictions of these portals throughout time. If you want to see some of them, folks, go to my Flickr account. It's linked there on freemantv.com. It's the icon with two small dots. Very boring icon that they have, don't even know. But you can link to my Flickr account right there, and I'll include it here in the show notes as well so that you can see all of the depictions of the ancient portals that have been carved into monuments throughout all of civilization. This is a story that is carried on through, I mean, this is where we get the tales of the fairies. This is where we get all of the goblins and ghouls. But the idea that you're mentioning now, the concept of sending your consciousness into another dimension or through space, this seems to be what is the real goal here. Because as we witness all of the things that we've studied, from chemtrails to the CERN and the VLF arrays, the ionospheric heaters, as ISCAT shot a Doritos commercial to Ursa Major, the deep guide, deep wave guide, and Cape Canaveral, another antenna array sent the day the Earth stood still, the movie, to Alpha Centauri, right?
Of all things.
Yeah, right? Of all the movies in the world that you want to send out to the neighboring solar system, day the Earth stood still, yes. But still, this shows us that we can transmit information, okay, so through these great distances. And it shows now that we are starting to move to this point of massive quantum computing, the Blue Brain Project, Neuralink, and then, of course, Starlink, of all these satellites that SpaceX is launching up there. You know, if you don't think Neuralink and Starlink are going to go together, then you're crazy, guys. So the technology is moving towards the idea of transmitting consciousness into laser-guided database satellites that then can shoot them into distant stars. So it seems that the technology is moving into the story of the ancient past, wouldn't you say?
I would, and it's going to lead us, and all of us, into big decisions. Do we want the neural link? Like, do we want the hole in our brain like the pig, or do we want to be able to go down and sit in the middle of a stone circle and intuitively receive the same information?
Right.
There's going to be a lot of choices to make, and you know, it's coming really quick, really quick.
Yeah, this has to be pushing your research. I mean, I what was it that really brought you to this point?
I started with Native American ancient mounds, and I was studying the mounds, and the mounds kind of led me to the star ancestors. The star ancestors kind of led me to portals and stargates, and in turn led me to UFOs, and then everything just kind of over the years kind of just keeps cycling back. It'll go from one to another. Portals will be important again, and then UFOs will be important again. And at this point, it's just really trying to keep up with it, what's going right on. You know?
No doubt. All right, we're moving into a fantastical future, and it's all just opening up in front of us everywhere. And something's going on during this lockdown, right? Like, There's so much more going on that people aren't paying attention to. And we're going to kind of wet the whistle for the second hour of this program. But with all of the rocket launches that have been going on since the lockdown happened, I mean, just so many. We're talking countless. It's you know, sometimes 3-4 rocket launches a week. That's crazy. You know, I grew up in Orlando. I watched the rocket launches, and, you know, they were a very special event. It wasn't like, okay, 3 rockets launched today. And I mean, if we haven't moved into the world of Gattaca, we're very close to that right now, where everybody's tracked by their DNA and you're determined who you are and what you're going to be in the future. And rocket launches are happening every hour. This all going on while just constant barrage of fireballs coming in from the sky. To me, this all ties together, because for so long I tracked these mysterious fireballs that were coming into our atmosphere that didn't seem to have a rock, no bolide as a scientific term for that, just a fireball that no one could explain. And then these were causing earthquakes, sonic booms, and you know, we've been getting some very, very dramatic video of these around the globe as this has been pouring in and the rockets have been launching up. There definitely seems that we have moved into a new point in space. We're in a different galactic season, if you will, and everything's coming to a head. And maybe all of these lockdowns were a security precaution to things coming from extraterrestrial sources. And I don't mean aliens. I mean all of the incoming fireballs, all of the strange asteroids hurtling towards planet Earth. And how many satellites do we honestly need in our atmosphere? I mean, seriously.
And how come all these fireballs ain't hitting any of those satellites?
Right. Yeah, good point. Good point. Yeah, they should have been taken out in swarms, really, if you think about it. But yeah, we're about to hit that point where our sky is so saturated with satellites that you won't even be able to see the sky. And Starlink, you know, is planning 20 to 30,000 of them forming a grid around our planet.
Yes, a bunch of, seen something on, a bunch of astronomers have all got together and they're trying to come up with something, because that normally the time-lapse images they take aren't working anymore because they're just getting streaks across the images from all the satellites. So they're having trouble actually seeing the sky at this point, and there's just thousands of more going to go up there pretty soon. They're not going to be able to see the sky through still images or That's through time-lapse images.
All of those observatories are shut down too. Recibo had a crazy meltdown, like they were hit with a direct energy weapon of some sort.
Yeah.
So we're not even being able to see into
exactly. A lot of the observatories shut down when COVID started, but they never reopened. And I mean, you go to observatory. I've been to lots of observatories. You'll have a one or two guys on, you know, in one area, another couple guys here or there, but it's not a place that's packed. It's not a, you know,
right.
It's not a gym. It's not a pizzeria. And a lot of these observatories didn't reopen. And then, like you said, all of a sudden Arecibo, they're down, the biggest one, they're down, malfunction. You know, they could be down for years. I mean, we can't see nothing. We can't see through time-lapse images now because there's too many satellites. We can't, you know, who do we trust? Who do we trust to tell us?
Yes. And what would you do if there was an extinction level event coming to planet Earth? You know, they've shown us in all of the movies that they would never tell us, that they would tell us that, well, there's a virus, right? 2001 Space Odyssey,
Bingo.
Contact. There's a number of them. I can't remember. What was it? Armageddon, right?
Yep.
Like, no, we can't tell the public that this is happening. So, but we need to be prepared. So all of a sudden they're setting up field hospitals. They got the Mercy and the Comfort on either side of the United States. They've got, you know, all this stuff that they said was for COVID, but yet none of it was used for COVID whatsoever. And then once the threat seemed to have passed, because they were warning us, oh my God, there's an asteroid. Actually, there were about 30 heading straight for planet Earth. You know, and it's going to occur on March 25th, you know, an extinction level event potentially. That's just happened to be the day they started the lockdowns. That just happened to be when they prepared all of these field hospitals, putting not medical doctors, but trauma doctors in all of them, right? And everybody went to their deep underground bases. General O'Shaughnessy was broadcasting from Cheyenne Mountain deep inside of Space Command. and, you know, I've never seen that before in my life. It freaked me out, Chad, as I'm watching, you know, a general from a deep underground base in Cheyenne Mountain, which is where Stargate is, folks, is talking to the public, telling us about these field hospitals and all of the things that they're doing and how they're, you know, who's this guy, right? Like, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, we're getting messages from the continuity of government, and generals are speaking for us from deep underground bases about the, you know, this doesn't happen. And it seemed to just kind of go by, and no one seemed to care.
No one does care. It's funny. And papers came out a couple of days ago. It's 3 or 4 days ago. I don't know. It may have been Forbes. I may be wrong on that. But the title of it was, "The COVID Pandemic is the Perfect Exercise for an Asteroid Impact."
No way.
And I mean, that pretty much says it all right there. I mean, and it is. But the fact that they can come out and say that and nobody even blinks an eye, like, whoa.
And we had Shepard Ambellis on here, and he pointed out that John Hopkins University, who is in control of the COVID numbers and the statistics that are coming out, the modeling for COVID was John Hopkins University. Well, they're also in charge of the DART program, which is the Near Earth Objects program. So the same people tracking COVID are the same people tracking the near Earth asteroids.
Yep. And the DART program, that one scares me. In 2021, we're actually going to go and we're going to test out magnetics and blast. We're not going to blast the asteroid. We're going to blast the moonlet of the asteroid. This asteroid has a moon of its own, and we're about to go up there and blast this thing and see where it goes and see what happens. I mean, maybe we should simulate it. You know, should we really go up there and blast it? I'm not so sure.
Right. Well, folks, we're definitely going to get deeper into this topic and much more in the members section. I want you to know that this show is entirely sponsored by member participation. So that's what keeps it going. And what that allows is for us to have a private server so that we don't have to worry about all the censorship going on. We don't have to be like Joe Rogan and have 50 shows removed when we go to Spotify. The membership pays for a private server so that this show can stay open, free, and uncensored. So if you haven't become a member, come check it out for a month, you know. You'll love it. There's so many deep conversations that go on. You get the whole back catalog of the Free Zone from the Oracle years. So much given to you from the members section. It's only $8 a month, and it will definitely nurture your soul. So come on over to freemantv.com and check it out. Just give it a try. You'll see. You'll love it. There's so much going on here. People just don't know. I hope the word gets out more and more. So please share as much as you can, because that's the only way anybody's going to start to pick up on this knowledge. Of course, we always have to thank Steve Mercer for being the producer behind the scenes, that just is the loveliest guy that wants to help and brings us all these amazing guests. So producer Steve at freemantv.com is where you would send any guest suggestions, show ideas, or things that you want to know. Just let us know and we'll make it happen. So Chad, let's tell everybody about you. Let's get people over to chadstimke.com. You might want to spell your last name. I know it's a little confusing. Of course, it will be right here linked up in the show notes for everybody, but not everybody goes to the show to listen. So I want to make sure everybody knows your work and can get deeper and deeper into this.
Yeah, thanks, Freeman. And absolutely, thank you, Steve, too, for being the man behind the scenes. Steve's awesome. And Chad Stemke. Stemke is spelled S-T-U-E-M-K-E. And, you know, I have some articles over on my website, a couple books, but I'm not out to make a buck. I just like to keep everybody informed and up to date. And I have a Facebook if anybody wants to chat. But love to talk to anybody. If anybody has anything they want to talk about, feel free to get in touch with me.
Yeah, I wonder if you could get even more stories. I had a moment where I was walking through a cow pasture. I started on one side of the field. And as I was walking across, I ended up back where I started. And I could never explain this. I could never even really feel it for myself. Like, I just don't have an explanation. So I understand the original story you were telling where he didn't have anything to say, because it's just like, well, I don't know, man.
Exactly.
All of a sudden I was on the same place I started, even though I walked 100 yards. It was really bizarre.
Yeah, exactly. To me, it almost lends a little credence to his story that, you know, he doesn't want to be out there telling his story. If anything, he wishes it would disappear. You know, right. To me, that lends a little bit of credence at least.
And didn't this correlate with the Watson story? Sorry, I shouldn't get us on another stream at this moment. My brain's just going off. This is one of my favorite topics, Chad. I love to get deep into this because it seems
fun. To be
the crux of everything. It really does, folks. Magnetics, electromagnetics, anomalies of this sort, and the transmission of your soul to a distant star, obviously, is the game plan. This is where everything is heading. And robotized human beings that can, you know, be controlled or run, or, you know, what are they doing? Why would they be doing this? Are they going to have robot bodies waiting on the other side of a distant star for when an extinction level event does actually happen? They're not launching in rockets, right? They're just transmitting their souls over to the robots or clones that are waiting for them on another Goldilocks planet. You just don't know, but this really seems to be their goal. So we're going to dig so much deeper into this, into the members section. I hope you guys will come over and check it out. Make sure to let everybody know the Free Zone goes live 8 p.m. Eastern every Saturday night, and has for the last 15 years. It's not going to stop, folks. I'm going to keep going, and we're going to keep digging into this mystery because it needs to be resolved. And as Chad is pointing out, it is the true guide to the liberation of the human soul, to understand all of how this works and to move into your soul-based magnetics away from all of these electromagnetics that are controlling our lives. So until next week, okay, stay safe, stay calm, and try to find your bliss. Thank you all so much. We'll see you next week. We'll be right back.